Experience Ant-Man and the Wasp, Quantumania, in 3D.
Scott Lang, you have a daughter. You're an Avenger. But out here, the Earl of Yuling.
On February 17th.
Kang's a monster. He can shatter existence.
An Avenger.
I don't care what he can do. I'm getting us home.
Must face a conqueror.
You may not want her to watch this.
I'm sorry, Cassie.
Ant-Man and the Wasp, Quantumania. Experience it in 3D. February 17th. Rated PG-13. May be inappropriate for children under 13.
Hi, and welcome to Deep Dive with Jamie Stein, where we take a deep dive look at all things reality TV, pop culture, and the world at large. I'm an intuitive and an empath, which means I pick up on the thoughts, feelings, and energy percolating in other people and the world around me. I believe there is meaning waiting to be found at every turn, if you're willing to see it. So join me as we dismantle everything from trash TV to high spiritual concepts and learn more about ourselves, each other, and how we're all connected.
Hi, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of Deep Dive with Jamie Stein. We are now officially into season 2 of the podcast, and I think I'm just going to take a moment just to issue a little bit of an apology because I didn't realize that I was actually going on a hiatus before I went on my hiatus, but I did realize last month that I needed a little bit of a break, and then realized that this is officially going to be a podcast with seasons, and we finished season 1 last month, and I took a little bit of a break with a few bonus episodes that I threw out there, and now here we are, season 2, back, and likely to record a batch of 12 more episodes. So welcome back. I missed you all. I'm happy to be here. And I can't think of a more fitting way to commence the second season than welcoming good friend to the podcast, Hanifa Wood, back to discuss one of our most cherished franchises, The Real Housewives of Potomac. Hello, Hanifa.
Yay! Congratulations on season 2 and season 1.
Thank you. And you are actually in your own season 2. You're in season 2 of Truth Be Told, right? Second season?
I am. Second season. I think we're like on episode 5 that just came out on Friday.
How is it for you when something is out that you're in? Is that an experience or does it not affect you either way? Or
It doesn't really affect me either way because I'm not actually working on the show. I think it would be different if we were working and it was coming out, but I finished the season way back at the end of April, early May. So I feel a little bit detached from it, but it is kind of cool seeing myself on TV though.
Do you watch your work?
I do now. When I was younger, I did not. Because I would just rip myself to pieces. Oh. And now, for some reason, I get such a kick out of it.
Oh, that's cool. Do you binge it? Because all the episodes are released at once, or they're released weekly? I forget how it works.
No, it's released weekly.
Oh, okay.
I don't know how they did season 1, but this show for this season is released 1 a week, every Friday.
Okay, so you get to look forward to watching yourself every week.
Totally, if I have time to watch myself. Like, it's not like I have this weekly thing that I do where I'm like, okay, I'm going to sit and I'm going to watch this show. And, you know, I have to pull myself away from reality TV and YouTube video clips to even watch my own shows.
Well, it was like we were talking this past week and it was like I was telling you, I've just become so much more and more aware how reality TV, certainly it actually is a vehicle for really deep thought and introspection as far as my business goes and the content I'm creating. But it does also really serve this other purpose for me, which is I do need programming that is specifically there for me to unplug and unwind and, you know, to not have to think too hard and just really kind of allowing myself to rest into that recently, especially, you know, after a day of working with clients. I just need programming that I can lie down, rest my head, and just kind of lose myself in a way that's not going to be overly challenging if I don't want it to be.
Absolutely. And it's funny because I'm sitting on the floor of my living room and I'm starting to rock back and forth because I can feel the excitement just talking about reality TV. I'm such a junkie. It's so absurd. And I love the drama of it all. And like, if they don't give me enough drama, then I'm pissed off. I love it, Jamie. I love it.
All right. Well, on that note, why don't we jump in? I feel like there's so much to discuss. We're about probably halfway through the season of Potomac, right? I mean, I feel like I say this every episode. I'm a little overwhelmed going into this. I was revisiting certain moments from season one, from the first half of the season, just to kind of brush up my memory. And I have to say, I find this season very confusing on a lot of different levels. I feel like there's so many threads going on all at once that are overlapping and interweaving, and my head is spinning a little bit. And mm-hmm. I think there's so much for us to get into, but I think the primary sources of my confusion, just to kind of initiate this conversation, mostly come in the form of both Wendy and Mia. Both of them this season, I find utterly baffling for different reasons. And okay. I want to say, like, full disclosure, I actually am a Wendy fan. I've been a Wendy fan since last season. I love Wendy. I love what she brings to the show. But I want to say, she and Mia are completely confusing to me this season. So I at least want to start kind of dismantling those two and maybe what we see here in sense of them. I think what I want to say up top, Wendy's at the heart of a lot of the drama this season, whether it's with Mia or with Giselle. The season
and Robin.
Robin, yeah, by kind of association with Giselle.
By way of Giselle,
exactly.
Yeah.
You know, the season started off with this conflict between Wendy and Mia. And it was so interesting because I went back and watched that first dinner at Wendy's house, you know, when she was unveiling Happy.
Revealing, yes.
Yeah, revealing.
And her titty cupcake.
Exactly, revealing her new breasts. And I was really kind of watching for the moment where things started going south between her and Mia. So the first moment that I saw them kind of butting heads as they sit down to dinner, right? And Mia says to Wendy, "So you got your tits done," or whatever she says, "and you got some other stuff done too, right? Or you got some other stuff done." And I want to be honest, to me, it didn't actually feel shady. It felt inquisitive. It felt curious. Maybe I'm wrong about that. But either way, Wendy just immediately, like, her whole demeanor changes. She clearly is on the defense when she hears that. And then she shoots back right at Mia like that. She's like, "Well, you clearly had a lot of work done." Like, you know, like, basically, you know, work shaming her. And so even just right there, if we just stop it right there, right? There's already so much kind of information coming at me, because what happened just a few moments prior to that was Wendy did the unveiling of her breasts. And I don't know if you remember, but it's actually quite funny. Like, she's going on and on in this huge monologue. Everyone's kind of bored to tears. Giselle, in what is admittedly a kind of a funny, you know, interview, is like, "Land the plane, Wendy, land the plane." You know, and then she unveils her breasts, right? And she's very proud of them, and everyone's oohing and aahing over them. And Robin's the one who's like, "Okay, but you did something with your backside too, right?" And Wendy initially says no and denies it and is adamant about it. And then when people are asking about what other work she's had done, she's like, "Well, I got a few tweaks done," but she won't sort of say anything more. So then Mia kind of owns everything she's done, including her butt. And then by the end of the dinner, Wendy suddenly turns around, reveals her ass, and is like, "Yeah, I had my ass done too." And Mia observes, "Oh, okay, because I copped to it, now you feel okay to do so." So I'm just laying this groundwork to kind of start to maybe get in a little bit to where Wendy was at with all this stuff. Because in watching it back, it really did feel to me like, okay, it seems like Wendy sort of came into this season with some sort of narrative that she wanted to create, where it was like she was willing to cop to certain surgeries, aka the breasts, maybe didn't really want to cop to some of the other surgeries. And anytime something started to come in that was going to interrupt that narrative, something in her started to get inflamed or defensive. And let's just start right there. I'm just curious, like, is anything happening for you? Like, where are you?
Well, as I'm listening to you talk, I'm wondering, was Wendy actually ready to reveal? Even though she made all of the party and invited everybody, and probably the season was starting, so she had to have a scene done, like if we're being technical about stuff. But was she all the way ready to reveal everything that she did? Then I was thinking to myself, this is a Black woman getting her backside done, which in society, like how they say Black men have big dicks, like Black women are supposed to have these big derrieres out of the womb, you know? So not having one is kind of like a source of shame.
Well, that's what I wanted to ask about, because this is something I don't know about. So I actually did want to know, like, in the Black community, is there a hierarchy of surgery? Because I know that this has come up with Kenya too, where Kenya, like all the other women,
she denies plastic surgery, and especially that of her ass.
Right. So I'm wondering, is there a stigma specifically associated with, enhancing the ass?
From my experience, absolutely. Like, it's funny that I'm going to say this. I lucked out and got an ass from my mom and my dad, you know? So, and I feel no sort of way about the upper part of myself, like whether or not I have big boobs or small boobs or whatever. For me, the main focus has been my posterior. And like I said earlier, it's known that Black women are supposed to have bigger backsides. And when you don't, it's like a source of shame. Also, the same in the community is like, if you don't have any edges on the side of your head, like where for your hair, that's like also something that you could be talked about.
Can you just tell me, because this is actually something I've never understood, and I've actually tried to Google it and I never got the answer. Can you tell me what is an edge when it comes to the hair?
It's like the edge of your hairline, right? So you know how like some men's hairline, they recede when they're going bald, right? Mm-hmm. So sometimes when women have had a lot of tension on the edges of their hair, so right around like the forehead to the ears, when there's been a lot of tension either from braids or putting your hair in really tight ponytails, you can actually cause your hair follicle to come out and never grow back. There's an actual technical term for it. I can't remember it at the time, but not everybody can grow their edges back. And there's even a surgery that you can get done, kind of like how they did the hair replacement for men. They now do it for Black men and women to fill in their edges. But that's like within the last, I would say, 5 years. Also, another thing that I would say my community, like if you don't have any edges, then you definitely will get talked about. You know, you'll even see it in memes or people going after each other, talking about their edges.
And so just for my clarity, so basically if you don't have edges, it's the equivalent of saying like a receding hairline.
Basically.
And what?
Basically.
I'm just curious, like what's the flavor of the shame, meaning if you don't have, because what I hear you saying is like, you know, because of, you know, wear and tear and treatments and wigs and whatnot, the hair follicle gets worn down. And so what's the flavor of the shame? Like, oh, you don't have hair that can withstand, or you've done too much stuff, or what is
it? Well, guess what, Jamie? So I like, if I'm going to be completely all the way honest out there, I don't have the best of edges at all. That's why I keep my hair cut very, very short, or I wear wigs. And I wish I could tell you what the flavor of the shame is, because yes, I know like my edges came out because I wore braids as a little girl and as a teenager all the time. So it just, my hair follicle was just too stressed out. And then it didn't grow back in the way that it would when I was younger. But the shame is like, you're not as attractive if you don't have your edges. Maybe there's like a source of femininity that's missing in some kind of way. And it's funny because it's like, it's not even like you were born that way. It just happened.
That's what I find so interesting about it, is that what I hear you saying is that it's often the result of kind of cultural norms, you know, like this is how, you know, we style or we dress, and totally. And then this happens as a result. So it's just, I'm just kind of sitting with it and trying to translate it through my own.
It's shame on top of shame on top of shame. right? Which is sad.
And I guess if I do kind of equate it just to like run-of-the-mill, like male pattern baldness, right? There's yes. just kind of, yeah, there can be kind of a stigma and a shame just because it's like, yeah, it's just, it's less, it's considered less attractive.
Yeah.
And I guess, yeah, if I equate it to baldness, there's just kind of a vulnerability, or acne, for example, which, oh my God, I went through cystic acne at one point when I was younger. It's
me
like,
too.
Yeah,
me
so
too.
It's just, there's just that vulnerability of I have this visible thing that marks me that all of society knows is typically experienced as embarrassing, and
right.
you just kind of have to wear it visibly. And sometimes that's enough. In terms of the flavor, it's just like there's yep. a beauty standard. I don't live up to it. It's sort of an easy thing that people could poke. It's not something I can really hide, or I can hide it, but I have to go out of my way to hide it. And it's just sort of as simple as that.
Yes. I remember watching YouTube videos of a girl who went and got surgery, and she told a story about how she was in bed with her boyfriend and he had never seen her. She wore weaves and her headscarf came off in the middle of the night. And this has nothing to do with Housewives of Potomac, but her headscarf came off in the middle of the night. And when she woke up, he was like over her looking at her like, oh my God, because he had never seen that she didn't have any edges or anything like that. She ended up going to get this surgery and was talking about the doctor who she went to and how wonderful it was. And it changed her life. Like, it's a big deal.
Okay.
It's a big, big, big deal. Same as a Black woman walking around with not having a booty. It is a thing. It's a thing. And she's from the motherland.
Right.
Okay. So that's even more like pressure to be this Black goddess, you know, with her tits and her ass. Yes, she has the degree and she's super smart, but there's something about like, it's not enough, right? It's not enough. It's not enough just to be intelligent and to be on TV and be political. It's not enough. You got to have that body too. And I'm not saying those are my views, but that's what it's feeling like.
Well, here's kind of my experience of Wendy. And again, I just kind of want to say and reiterate, I come from a place of really liking Wendy.
Yeah.
She's actually one of my favorite housewives. I love her fire and I love like the flavor that she brings to the show. But you know, one of the things that I'm always aware with her is that she is very quick to react. You know, this is a woman who can be very defensive. And we saw this from, you know, her first season as far back as when they went to that lake house trip and Ashley brought her baby and that triggered something in Wendy and she flew off the handle. We've seen it this season in the way that she sort of responds to the conflict, not just with Mia, but with Giselle. It's like when something triggers Wendy, she is quick to react. And I just say that because to me, it does really speak to this kind of defensive place in her that's kind of like fight or flight. And it moves really fast. And it's sort of quick to defend herself. And it's quick to take a stance. And I think for me, it kind of says something sort of about her and her relationship to herself and her lack of comfort inside of herself. And I just bring this up because it's like we've seen Wendy in less than two seasons already trying on so many different hats. You know what I mean? Like last season, it was all about 4 degrees, 4 degrees, 4 degrees, to the point that it was a running joke, right? Mm. You know, Wendy and her 4 degrees. And then this season, it's about my body, my body, my body, right? There's always a way that she's, whether it's the intellect or then suddenly it's the body, there's a way in which she's always actively and assertively attempting to define herself in a certain way. And it feels, again, it has that energy of like, this is who I am. And it's just so interesting because when I have felt around with Wendy, and I feel like this speaks to your point of like, no matter what she does, it's not enough. And again, this is just me kind of intuitively feeling around. It's the images that I always get of her kind of like going back to her youth and maybe sort of what her youthful spirit was kind of like this tomboy. Like that's always what I feel in her is always this kind of like, and the images that I get, and again, my images aren't necessarily literal, but they can be metaphorical and they capture a flavor of something. I always just see her as kind of like this young female Tom Sawyer type who's sort of like, you know, barefoot in the mud, in the trees, in the river, running through the land. I mean, the spirit to me feels very kind of like adventuresome. It feels precocious, curious, vivacious. It feels, I mean, I'm kind of dropping into it now. It feels very heart-centered, you know, kind of just like, you know, a young girl who's going to sort of tear things up and has sort of like that kind of vivacious spirit. It's almost, when I feel into it, this experience of then getting messages. Here I am. Let's just say I'm right about this. I'm Wendy. I've kind of got this sort of tomboy spirit where I'm marching to the beat of my own drum. It's very precocious. It's connected to my heart. But then I get messages, you know, either from culture, from peers, from society, from family, or all of it, that's like, somehow this isn't enough. You know, this is this definition, my experience of embodied girlhood, femininity, womanhood, this is deficient in some way. And like, it hurts me. And so then it's almost like, as Wendy, I'm looking around and it's like, I see what the standard is, meaning the full-bodied woman who, you know, has the tits, has the ass, has the makeup, looks a certain way. I believe on some level that's what I'm supposed to be. I'm not that. Maybe I don't even really want to be it, but I learn on some level I'm supposed to want to be that. But then because there is something so proud in me, I also don't want anyone to know that I secretly want to be that. So let me now kind of overcompensate to the intellect in the achievements, in the accomplishments. And I'm the one with 4 degrees, and I'm the political commentator, and I'm the professor, and I've defined myself that way. But secretly, there's still this place where I want to be the full-bodied woman. But do I really want to be the full-bodied woman? It just feels like she volleys back and forth between all these sort of different identities because she's trying to protect against something inside of her. You know, she's there's a way in which she doesn't feel safe, or like there's space or room to just rest into the actual truth of who she is. And because there is this pride and this kind of defensiveness and almost this kind of like, you're not going to get me. It's like she's so quick to like latch on to the next identity and then the next identity. And it's almost like, and I know I'm saying a lot all at once, so just bear with me. I'm kind of wrapping up this long thought, but it's almost like in the place where, as you said, you know, the intellectual professor wasn't enough and she kind of recognized there was some sort of hole there for her. And then she goes and she gets the surgery. It's like, she doesn't want anyone to know, though, that her getting that surgery came from a feeling of not enoughness or insecurity or feeling deficient. So I'm going to get the surgery, but then I'm going to control the narrative by owning it and saying, hey, I did this. It's great. I'm empowered. And by me kind of taking the lead with this, no one's really going to have the opportunity to point a finger at me and say, oh, well, she had deep insecurities about who she is as a woman. But I still wonder to what degree it's all speaking to the authentic sense of Wendy and who she truly is underneath all this. All this meaning the body, the professor, the degree, all of it, all the everything she creates to kind of create a sense of identity for herself. Like, is she connected to the authentic Wendy?
You know, listening to you and thinking about Wendy, I just was like, man, I wonder if she just wants to like go away from her husband and her kids and just breathe by herself somewhere to figure this shit out. Like, I just got the strongest sense that this girl is tired. Like, she's so tired because she's trying so many things. Like, I think too, as Black women, like, we've had to do it all. We want to do it all. There's a lot of stuff on our backs to be successful, to take care of our families, to make money. It's just a lot of pressure. And I don't know, just thinking about her and listening to you, remember when Monique was like, she just sometimes goes to her lake house and she takes a minute. She's for some reason giving me Monique vibes, where their hands are in so many things, but it feels like they just, if they allowed themselves time away from it all, they probably would have a breakdown.
Yeah, it's interesting that you bring up Monique, because it actually is sort of a similar feeling. Like when I was talking about that defensive place in Wendy that's ready to fight, it does remind me a little bit of Monique. I mean, it has a different flavor. Monique feels a little more like she'll really fight. I mean, obviously she literally did.
Yes.
Wendy, it doesn't feel quite that intense. See, that's the thing. Wendy's flavor to me, it really touches me, because it feels so young, but there's almost an innocence to it. I don't know why I say that. It just feels like, I just feel this innocent young girl who's just ready to like fight and defend herself, you know?
Right. But you know what? To me, sometimes fighting with your words is worse than actually putting hands on somebody. Not that I ever want to put hands on anybody or want them to put their hands on me. But I think she comes out of the box just as strong as Monique, but it's with her words. But with Wendy, I have a sense that if she stopped, she might just crumble a little bit. And who would be there to like hold her up? I don't know enough about her relationship with her husband. I have seen the little bit that we have seen of her and her mother. I doubt she would go to her mom for that moment. But I do know, have you ever had surgery before? You've had surgery before.
No, actually, I haven't.
So when you have surgery, it's far out. It's far out. And when you're doing elective surgery, you know, like you're literally putting your life, it's dangerous. You got to sign your life away on that one. Like if anything happens, like, you know, you knew that this could happen. Surgery is no joke. And to come back and then be in your family, take care of your kids, take care of your husband, still be that leader in your family. And to do this show, no wonder Wendy's crying all the time on the show.
Yeah. And so it kind of like, just, you know, going back to kind of the origin of this conversation, if I'm sort of putting all the pieces together, and I have a question for you here in all of this, is Wendy leading with, hey, I got my breasts done and happy in this and I'm having a party to celebrate it, because on some level she knows there's no way to hide the fact that she got breast augmentation? And so it is this thing where it's like, okay, I did something that on some level speaks to a feeling of deficiency in me. I don't want people to have the chance to kind of like, you know, have the upper hand. So I'm going to take the lead and write the narrative around this before anyone else has a chance to. If Wendy could have gotten away in some hypothetical universe of not even like letting people know that she'd gotten the surgery, do you think she would have just kept it quiet? Like, do you feel like she came in so hard and heavy owning the breast augmentation because she knew there was no way to mask that, and this was her way of controlling the narrative? Or do you believe that, like, even if she could have gotten away with keeping it a secret, she would have come in with this as loud and proud?
I definitely think that she needed to control the narrative. She needed to be in control of the situation. There was no way in hell people were not going to notice. I noticed on just the previews of the show. Like, I was like, what did Wendy do with her body? I noticed even before we had full scenes, you know, and she had to have the power in the situation and not have the situation have power over her. And she needed to let these women know that she's this strong ass woman who's doing for herself. And this is a conscious choice because she wants to feel better. I think it definitely goes against what she was playing last season. So she had to like wrap it all to get up in a box. Like the fact that she has 4 degrees and now this body thing, it all has to follow the same narrative in some kind of way. And she's smart. And that's what she's trying to make us believe. It feels like, no, I'm an intelligent woman. And this is also an intelligent move. Like this is also something that is boss. Like I'm making boss moves. I'm getting my body done. I'm on CNN or whatever network she's on. She's doing these boss things. Cause now with plastic surgery, it's like women empowerment in some sort of way, that you get to choose and you get to look however you want to look, like if that's going to make you feel better. So she's definitely like leading with that.
What I also find so interesting about it, and this strikes me over and over as I listen to her this season, I almost feel like I'm like, you know, because Wendy keeps saying you can be a professor and a commentator and you can also be sexy. And it's just so interesting because whenever I hear her say that, I'm like, but you're the one creating these labels right now. Mm-hmm. Do you know what mm-hmm. I mean? Like, mm-hmm. I mean, I get
and,
what.
And I think Giselle actually said, and, you know, we, I don't know if we want to quote Giselle on here, but I think Giselle even said, well, you were sexy before. I think there was some mention about Wendy being all of this that she's saying that she is because of the plastic surgery that somebody said, I think it was Giselle.
Yeah, Giselle did say that.
Wrong,
yeah.
But like you were already that, but she didn't see it, obviously. And she didn't feel it, obviously.
Yeah. And that's the thing. I'm trying to figure out what I mean by this, because I feel like it's not a fully formed thought, but I feel it so clearly in my body. It's something around, I mean, I get the general gist of what she's saying of like, as a woman, you can have it all. And I'm not saying that there obviously aren't messages kind of, you know, in the media and in the culture and in the system about who women are supposed to be. But I also have to say, every time I hear Wendy speak about like, you don't have to be one or the other, there's this part of me that, I don't know, I just feel a little bit like, yeah, right. I think we all know that now. Like, this isn't, you know, 1999 or even the year 2010. I think, I mean, that's almost in a way what The Real Housewives is about. You know, we have sort of women in our 50s who are entrepreneurs and housewives, and they're also sexy and in their bodies. There's a way that she's oversimplifying it where I'm just like, but you're the one making labels right now. You're the one kind of identifying as like this or that, rather than just sort of letting yourself be all things at once. It's like, it's almost like the lady doth protest too much. You know what I mean? It's like you can scream from the rooftops, I'm all things at once, or you can just simply be all things at once. And it's almost like in the way that she keeps protesting, I'm all things at once, I don't believe her. I don't know what I don't believe. I don't believe that she believes she's all things at once. I don't believe it's like what you're saying. There's a narrative that she's writing around this almost mm-hmm. as a way. Yeah. She's trying to sculpt the narrative in a way where she's in charge of the situation
mm-hmm.
and that it's not revealing this deeper vulnerability or this deeper sense of inadequacy in herself. And I think that's the falseness that I feel.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense?
Yes, it does. And I just got an image of her like asking her husband with her new body. Like for some reason in my head, I was thinking she probably asks him more for compliments now than she did before. Like, you know, she gets all this work done, and I'm totally making this up in this moment, but this is what came to my head, was that she's looking in the mirror, she's putting on one of her new outfits, and, you know, she's asking him like, do you like it? And that it's more than what it was before. And I don't know what I'm trying to say with that, but that's what's coming through.
It's like that she's got something to prove. That's what I'm hearing. And I think she doesn't want people to know that she's got something to prove. Just like she had something to prove with the 4 degrees. And now she's got something to prove with the body. And it's like, yeah, just that voice. It's like, no one can know. I have something so fucking deep to prove. But no one can know that I have something deep to prove, because that reveals my vulnerability. And so let me just get ahead of this. And, you know, it's like, you know, I was saying to you before, it reminds me so much in a way, and I know this is a strange comparison, of Teddy Mellencamp from Beverly Hills, where I had kind of a similar sense of almost like what I would call confused identity, volleying back and forth between like identities and hats you're trying to try on, where it was a similar feeling for me with Teddy, where it feels like whenever I dropped into her, I was like, you feel like you've kind of got this tomboy spirit that combines elements of both, you know, what we think of as traditionally feminine and then maybe more traditionally masculine. And it's like, because somewhere inside you learn that wasn't okay, or that's not enough. You're always sort of trying on these different identities that never feel authentic to me either way. So it was like, I remember her first season, she came in and she was really self-deprecating. And she was like, oh, I'm the clumsy one who doesn't belong in Beverly Hills. And there was a way that she was trying to define herself as like not, you know what I mean? The glamorous diva Beverly Hills housewife. And it felt fake. And I remember, I mean, I know she's not popular now, but Erica really had her number on that and was just like, you're acting like you're lost in a sea of sharks and I'm not buying it. And I want to say, as Jamie, I didn't buy it either. I'm like, I feel like you're disowning kind of your inner diva. But then the next season she came back and clearly responding to the first season image of herself. She had like hired a stylist and suddenly she was like dressing in the clothes. And that felt really weird too. It was like she like the pendulum swung into the other direction. It's like now she's trying on this identity. And with Teddy, it's just like, oh my God, just land in the middle already where, you know, for me, like the image I get of her is always like living on a horse ranch somewhere in like New Mexico or Arizona, looking really sexy in a pair of like faded jeans and like a button down shirt. And like, yeah, she's like a powerful woman who can wrangle horses and tend to the land. And then she's got like a hot husband and, you know what I mean? A brood of kids. And like, she just, to me, she sort of feels like she can kind of combine those strong energies. And in a different way, it's something I feel similar with Wendy, where it's like you have some core authentic energy that, for whatever it's worth, as Jamie, it comes through me as sort of like a tomboy, sort of scrappy energy. But in the place where you're just kind of like, again, you don't think it's enough. You think you're not allowed it. You got hurt there. And now you have something to prove. It's like you're trying on all these different identities. And at the risk of almost repeating myself, just because I feel like it's important, because in a way it really hits me in my heart. Like, I really wonder, obviously Wendy has an idea of what her body is supposed to look like. And she has an idea of like what her feminine form is supposed to be. And by the way, I just want to be clear, this is not in any way a judgment of her surgery or anyone who gets surgery. And I think, you know, if you authentically have a body that feels like it's the body that's meant for you, great, go and get it. I think specifically in Wendy's case, I do wonder to what degree she actually feels this is the authentic body of Wendy, or to what degree it's a learned desire because somewhere along the way she got the message that the way she presents isn't enough. And I guess I just want to speak to that because it does. It just, I don't know, it hits me in my heart that like it might not even be what she really wants for herself. But it's what she thinks she wants for herself. Mm-hmm. And then even that, she doesn't want people to know. You know what I mean? But she, you know, she does, regardless of whether she truly wants it for herself or she doesn't, the vulnerability in wanting something different for herself and in wanting to prove something, she so wants to avoid that, that she needs to make it seem like, as you said, she's in complete control of the situation. Mm-hmm. So to me, it would make sense then, bringing this back around to the start of the conversation, if it's true, right, one, that you can't hide breast augmentation, and if it's true that there is a stigma associated to the rear end that's not associated to the breast, it would make sense then that she kind of came into the season being like, okay, this is the story I'm writing. I'm leading with the breasts. I'm taking control of the narrative. No one's going to know about the backside or the other tweaks. This is as much as I'm willing to reveal. Go.
I just have to say, too, like, there's no way in hell, this is my opinion, but there's also no way in hell for you to have tits and ass and not have a little bit of the stomach. And all these women have completely flat stomachs. So I just want to school the people out there that there's shit going on with the stomachs as well. Like, there's lipo or there's a tummy tuck or something. There's no way that you can have just those two things. Like, if you're a little thicker, you're going to have a waist. I don't know why I need to say that, but I need to say that. Cause every time I see these women and their stomachs are completely flat, I'm like, that's not possible. It's just not possible.
Well, let me ask you this though. Do you think, cause what Wendy said at the end of the dinner, when she finally admitted that she got her rear end done,
yeah,
the women were like, why didn't you say so? And she's like, I wanted to reveal it in my own time. Do you think she actually intended to reveal it all along? Or do you think she only revealed it once she realized it was going to be talked about?
I think that with that group of people, whatever she wants to reveal, let her reveal it. We don't have to know about her ass or her tummy or whatever. Like, if she just wanted to give us the tits for this night, she's just going to give us the tits. I don't need to go any further in that.
Do you think she had ever planned?
No, I think she thought it was just going to be the breast.
And it's so interesting, right? Because it feels like, yeah, there was sort of this preemptive plan on Wendy's part of like, I'm going to control the narrative. I'm going to squelch any talk before it can start. And isn't it interesting then that the huge flare up with Giselle stems from this notion of like people talking? Like, I just feel like for Wendy this season, and it's interesting to think about what this might mean for her. It's interesting that this season for Wendy is all about, I'm coming in trying to control the narrative, and then the narrative really gets spun away from her. And then you see where it takes her, what it does. And it's almost to me like, oh, it's almost like a biblical story. It's like the more you try to control the narrative, and again, we saw this with Denise Richards, the narrative then will blow up in your face in the exact way you don't want it to.
And I want to go back, because even though I was talking about the stomach, that wasn't the only thing that I really wanted to get into. I am kind of like the Wendy. And what's the Mellencamp girl's first name?
Teddy.
Again? Teddy. Where that tomboy energy, I have that in me, right? And like, I'm in a Lakers t-shirt, huge t-shirt right now. I prefer to not have on any makeup. I prefer not to be in heels, but there is also this part of me that loves the attention that I do get when I'm in the quote unquote woman dress and style, you know, when I have on the dresses and I have a wig on and I have my makeup done, but I don't know how to sit in that all the way. There is a part of me that feels a bit lost there. And that might be what's happening in this experience with Wendy, is like, she's got these tits, she's got that ass, you know, she knows to go to Fashion Nova to get her outfits or whatever, like, and she just seems, like you're saying, she seems a bit lost there. It's not authentically her just yet. But as a woman who is, I mean, I'm not famous like they are, but someone who is seen on TV on the regular, there is a part of me that wants to be accepted for exactly who I am, but I don't know if I believe that that's possible. And I'm wondering if Wendy had that same feeling, you know?
And when you say to be accepted as you are you referring specifically to having kind of this multifaceted experience where, you know, sometimes you're one way and then other times you're another way? And these are all just the different, you know, facets and dimensions of Hanifa.
Absolutely. Because I am multifaceted. I pick and choose when I can be out in the world certain ways. But I do know that when I'm fully in my feminine, whatever, guys are more attracted to me that way. Even if I'm not feeling like, I don't want to fucking put on a dress and some heels and some makeup. Like, I don't want to. But it's like, I got to show up, because society has told me that if you are your tomboy self, you might not get the reward that you want, you know? And so maybe Wendy is like, I need to do X, Y, and Z because I want some sort of reward. We see what the payout is for a woman with a body, Kim Kardashian. We see it. Someone making millions and millions and millions of dollars just off of the way that they look.
Well, I think what I hear and what you're saying, I mean, look, obviously, I think all of us to varying degrees are multidimensional people. And I think the same could definitely be true for Wendy. And so I think, you know, part of what I'm hearing in what you're saying, and I think the interesting question for Wendy and for all of us, it's like, what is our right relationship to these different parts of us? And I think that's kind of like a key thing here, where Wendy, yeah, absolutely might have a relationship to that more traditional sense of what it means to, you know, be a woman or like a, you know, a full figured woman. But is it coming from a place of needing and wanting to prove something? Or like I was saying earlier, from a place of having learned something about herself and her own energy that she's trying to compensate for? Or is it coming from a place of, yeah, authentic expression of, this is my right relationship to this energy. This is how I want to wear it. This is when I want to wear it. Versus, as I said, am I trying to prove something? Am I trying to protect myself against a vulnerability or opening up to people being able to point a finger at me and tell me there's something wrong with me and hurting me? It definitely is interesting, though, to me, because as you said, it's like there's just so many hats that she's trying on. And it's when I drop into her, she just feels so busy. You know, there's just so much going on. She's got the degree. She's a professor. She's an entrepreneur. She's a commentator. She's a housewife. She's a wife. She's a mother. Now she's a candle maker, and she wants to like have her own Martha Stewart empire home goods line. And it's just, it just feels like she is whipping herself into this frenzy. It's like she's playing Twister with herself, bending over backwards to try to do all the things. And in that place, it just feels like, one, it feels like there's something so vulnerable underneath that. Like just, again, this place that it's like, I won't stop and drop in. I won't stop and drop in. I got to keep going. I got to keep going. And two, it just feels like this sheer force of will. And that's the place where, again, it's so interesting to me that she's the one who says, I've got 4 degrees. I can be a professor and I can be sexy. It's so interesting that to me that for someone who's so smart and in a way really sophisticated, the way she often speaks about herself and her life is in these like really, what I experience is almost like oversimplified identities or roles or categories. It feels almost like a little girl playing house. This is who I am. I'm the professor. The class is in session. This is the role I'm playing. Now I've got the candles. Don't tell me. What are these words? I can feel it. It's like, don't tell me I'm not. Don't tell me I can't do it. Don't tell me who I am. This is who I am. This is who I am. And you better like step off. Like, don't come here telling me I'm not.
Oh, Wendy.
But what's so interesting to me, though, it kind of bringing Mia into all of this is that as we're talking, I'm also realizing, because I really been sitting with Wendy and Mia and just what they bring out in each other, because their whole conflict at the start of the season was so, it felt so convoluted to me. But what's so interesting to me is I actually, as we're talking, I'm feeling this deep similarity between the two of them, because my experience of Mia is actually similar to what we're talking about, but a different flavor of it, where I feel like Mia is all about controlling the narrative. Like the way that she will lead with stuff so that you can never say it about her. So she is the woman who will sit down and tell you all the surgeries she had, including, you know, getting her clit worked on. She's the woman who will talk about being, you know, she met her husband being some sort of dancer or something at a gentleman's club. She, quote unquote, owns it. But to me, it very much feels like that thing of like, yeah, I'm preemptively owning it, because like the moment I own it, I take away your power or your ability to kind of point something out about me. And as I'm talking now, there's even more of a similarity to what Wendy is doing, because there has been some sort of weird gray area there where it's like, yeah, I was a dancer at this club, but I never took my clothes off. And yeah, there were strippers, but they were really there for the steak and the lobster. It's like, it to me, it's almost got that same flavor of I'm doling out some information, but I'm choosing which information I'm going to dole out. And there's a way in which I'm controlling the narrative. So it's just interesting to me that these two were butting heads. And it feels to me like there is this kind of commonality of I'm going to write the story before you have a chance to write it, and I'm in control. And what's interesting about both of them too, and I have to wonder if this was part of Wendy being triggered by her initially, they're both the ones who present very kind of buxomly, you know, and I guess they've both had a lot, you know, I won't say a lot for Wendy, but they've both had surgery to get there. So there's a way in which they're both embodying, you know, a very kind of specific flavor of, yeah, the full figured feminine form. They both chose to get work done to get there. They're both sort of controlling the narrative around it, and they're button heads.
I think it's interesting that you call them both full figured. I would think that Mia is, but Wendy to me is still a little skinny, even though she has these breasts and this the booty.
Well, I guess in the sense that you have to understand, I just watched the episode where she unveiled Happy in this. And so she was in like, you know, her nightie that was basically a corset and like the tits were out, and then she was showing off her ass. So in my mind, it's like, oh, she's full figured, you know?
Yeah. I can see the comparison for sure. I think Wendy plays a little bit better than Mia does to me. Like Mia, as soon as she starts talking, I'm like, girl, you ain't giving us the full truth. Like you are playing to the cameras right now. Like from day one with Mia, I have it. I think I need to give her like 2-3 more seasons to, before she just lets us see who she is. Yes, she's telling us who she is, but I haven't seen it at all. At all.
Yeah, no, I don't disagree with you. But the last thing I want to say about this too, because you just reminded me, another similarity, even in just kind of what you were saying, it's like the way that Mia is like, I'm the businesswoman. You know, mm-hmm. I run these chiropractic centers. I mean, to me, there is this energetic similarity to like, I'm the professor with 4 degrees. It's really interesting to me now that I'm thinking about it, how, in for me anyway, there's such a connection between them. Having said that, yeah, I will agree with you. With Mia, I will say I do not feel her at all. Mm-hmm. I don't feel her at all. And I keep trying to feel her and I cannot feel her at all. And it's so strange to me because I feel like there are even things like she is sharing personal stuff. You know, she's bringing us into her life with her mother. She has a tragic backstory that is certainly, you know, I mean, she's been through stuff and it elicits compassion and empathy. But even in her sharing all of that, every time she's on screen, I just sit there and I'm like, I have no sense of whom you actually are. That's kind of the vibe I get off Mia, where she's in scenes and she's interacting with the women and she's got this backstory, but I'm just sort of sitting there like, are you like real? If I reach out and put my hands on you, like, do I feel like a human skin under there, or are you like a mirage? She's just, there's something so guarded.
And to me, it's like the word void, like it's a void. She's avoiding, and that's what we're getting. We're getting this void of a person. And so much shit has happened to her in her life, and she truly is a survivor. If she went all the way into that, I doubt she would be on this television show. I doubt it.
Meaning what?
Meaning that it's so like how we learned about her having burns on a good part of her body, and also the relationship with her and her mom. Like, it's almost when she's crying, it's not that I don't believe her. I just don't think that she's feeling anything. So we're not going to feel anything. Like, yes, she can be women empowerment. I had all of this surgery. You know, I got my man, I got my kids, but I'm like, girlfriend, I have no clue who you are. And you have shown me nothing. You've told me everything, but you've shown me nothing. And Mia, to me, is the type of person, and I mean, take this very lightly for whoever's watching this, like, I would be a little concerned for her. I would be concerned. I really feel that about her because she's gone through so much. And the way she talks to her husband, I'm almost like, do you really like him? You know, or I don't even want to say the or, but do you really like him? Like, is that somebody you really want to be with? And if it is, could you really show him real love? Because have you been shown that in your life? Like, have you been shown that? Or has it been about your body and working at the strip club and that's how you meet the men? And, you know, and really the business is the husband's business, right? That she's taking over. Like, does she really honestly know love at all? At all? That was like, other than her children, because that love is kind of freely given, but you also have to give a lot to the children. Has she ever received it without having to give anything? Mm. So Mia, to me, is like, I haven't seen her at all. Like, I don't know who she is. I need to wait 2-3 more seasons before that makeup comes off, because she piles it on. And that like smiley face, you know, high-pitched voice. Like, what happens when she gets in a rage, you know? Not that we have to see it, you know, like that. I'm saying like for in her real life, I don't know. Even talking about it right now, I feel a little bit sad. I feel sad for her.
Yeah, it's like she certainly seems camera conscious. And it's all, like every time she's in a room, it just feels like she's almost sort of, and of course, all the housewives do this to some degree, but it feels like her whole presence is like the wheels are turning about what's the angle? Yeah. Like, how do I position this
I guess for the best advantage or for how it's going to look. And I'm just even thinking about, like, again, from her first scene, that strange moment where Karen and Giselle are getting into a fight. And Mia is suddenly like, well, Karen, with all due respect, Giselle has a beautiful heart, you know. But then in the next time we see her, she's backtracked on that. I'm like, well, I didn't realize she wished death on Ray. And so now I'm just thinking, are you just a pretty face? And it's you just never know where you stand with Mia. And then she'll say things that kind of sound like they make sense or they sound good on paper, but when you actually sort of look at what she's saying, it really doesn't make sense. So like in the last episode where they were talking about, it was like the goddess healing lunch, and she was, you know, saying in an interview, I just wanted to get all the women together to hash things out, because I really think at the heart of like all these arguments, it's just miscommunication. And I just sort of cocked my head and thought, really? Is that really what's at the heart of all these arguments? I think it's more than miscommunication. I actually think this is a lot more than miscommunication. But the way that she said it, it's like, I'm playing Switzerland. I'm going to be the neutral ground. I see the good in everyone. I'm going to bring them together in a way that doesn't really deal with any of the underlying issues. It's just going to kind of sweep things under the rug and like, let's move on. And now I get to be known as kind of like a peace broker.
Well, also, what she's giving me is Boss, because she's playing these Bravo producers. So if she comes in with some of the stuff she's coming with, they're going to give her more scenes. She's so new and she's already gathering the girls together to have them all figure out their shit that they've had for a few seasons now. I think she's really smart. Again, I'm going to plug the fact that she's a survivor and knows how to survive and make things come her way. That she's played, like you said at the beginning of your last statement, she's playing for the cameras. She's absolutely playing for the cameras. I haven't seen anything slip out yet where I'm just like, there she is. I haven't seen that one thing.
But let me ask you this. Do you think the Mia we're seeing is the Mia she is in real life? Or do you think she's different in real life than she is on camera?
For people in the foster care system, they've got to learn how to survive in people's households. So they will, whatever you want them to be, that's who they're going to be. Now, I wasn't in a foster care home, but I was the only child, lonely a lot. And every person's parents' house that I went to, I found a way to get those parents to love me. Okay. And that has been like this trait that I have, that I can be lovable to these and receive some kind of attention or love, but I have to adapt, right? I have to change myself in certain ways. And I'm not saying this is who she is, but it's just Mia is doing what she has to do to survive. If that means that she is in that house with her husband and she acts just like that, so be it. But who is she when nobody ain't home and she's looking at the mirror at herself? Like, sometimes people can even create those personas even when they're by themselves, because it's easier. It's easier than to drop all the way in. And discover who you are, you know?
For sure. And, you know, it's just so interesting because I'm thinking a lot about Erica Jane as we're having this conversation.
Listen, that's what I wanted to say, Jamie, too. And I totally forgot. She reminds me of Erica Jane in a way. So you're hitting it. That's it. I was thinking before I opened my mouth, I was like, ooh, don't forget the Erica Jane part. But I totally forgot about it. But yes, yes.
Well, I don't know if there's more that you want to say about that, but for me, I think the connection I'm drawing, it's really interesting. To me, it's this whole kind of, I mean, it makes total sense, but this whole sort of riff on the class, and I hate using this term because I know it's typically so judgmental. I don't mean it judgmentally. I'm just using it as an archetypal term, but it's a whole riff on like the archetype of the gold digger, where it's these strong, powerful, smart women. Right. Who get into these marriages. Right. Where obviously, you know, there's a payoff, literally. And it's like they're smart enough to know how it looks, and they're powerful enough to have pride and to think of themselves and to want others to see them as something other than the gold digger or the woman who married for money or, you know, to sort of get out of bad circumstances. And so there's a way, again, kind of going back to like, you know, the language we're using with Wendy, there's a way they'll write the story. So it's like, oh yeah, I'm acknowledging this or that. This is how I met them. Oh, this is the age difference. I'm okay with it. It's great. Honey, I'm a boss bitch and I love what I'm doing. And just like with what we were talking about with Wendy, it's a way of kind of co-opting and writing the story before anyone else gets a chance to.
Yep. It's like what I was, the story I wanted to tell before about how I said, imagine me eating shitty food for 2 weeks, you know, putting on 15 pounds, 10, 15 pounds or whatever, and then going to see a group of my friends and acknowledging. And before everyone's like, hey, have you fun? I'm like, hey guys, you know, I've been eating a lot of food these past 2 weeks, you know, like just announcing it before even their thoughts can get around, like, oh gosh, she does look a little heavy. Like you're always trying to beat the narrative because you want to stare the narrative in your direction so that it shows that you have total control over the situation. You don't want anybody to notice that, wow, things are really crazy over there. You know, like, wow, things are really crazy over in Wendy's house. Or they're not as put together as we thought they were. Or things over at Mia's house are upside down. Like, no, they get to control what we think. Not even what we say. They want to get you before you even think of something.
Mm-hmm.
And that's pretty skillful.
Well, that's what's so interesting to me about it. It's that these are powerful women who find themselves in disempowering situations. So that's why I say it's so interesting to me, because I think a lot of times when you think like of the stereotype of the gold digger, you think of like, you know, the one who defers, a disempowered woman, or, you know, sometimes it's men who's gold digging, disempowered women or men. You think of them as like, you know, vapid or dumb or this or that. But it's like, no, to see these really powerful women who, as you said, are clearly very skilled. Manifestors, obviously, dynamic. And it's like, that's what's so painful about it, is feeling this part of them that's like, I'm so aware of how this looks, and I'm so aware of a deeper vulnerability that it reveals in me, and that I've learned I've got to completely disown that vulnerability. So let me just, I'm going to rewrite the story, and I'm going to own it before, like you said, I'm going to own it before it can own me. So going back now to Wendy and Mia, what I thought was so interesting, and I'm curious kind of where this wrinkle will lead us. So they sit down at dinner, right? As I was talking about at the sort of top of this episode, and Mia asks this question where she's like, okay, so you got your breasts done and some other stuff done too, which again, so now the narrative that Wendy wanted to write is getting taken away from her. She's no longer in charge of the narrative. And Wendy turns so quick, you know, and it's just like, well, you've clearly had a lot of stuff done. And what I think is so interesting about that, Hanifa, that I want to bring into this is, isn't it interesting that Wendy is literally weaponizing the very thing she didn't want weaponized against herself? Like she's literally pointing a finger at Mia being like, honey, you got a lot of work done. And then she brings it up later. I think maybe it's like Karen's like love lunch or whatever Karen had early in the season, where she's like, I mean, you got this done and that done in your clit done. And it's like, whoa, Wendy, like for someone who came into this season and all season long is kind of saying, hey, I have a right to do this work. I have a right to sort of be who I want to be. You're pretty awfully quick to kind of cosmetic surgery shame the other woman. I thought that was very telling.
Well, that shows you that also she's not caught up with what she's done. It's almost as if she forgot that she had had any surgery done. And probably she's had these views about the women who have had plastic surgery before she got it, right?
Yeah.
Because you're not going to drop your judgments just because you've done something that you've judged others for.
Right. I mean, that's what I'm saying. That's kind of what I'm saying with Wendy, where it's almost like if I sort of intuitively or like, what's the word? Hypothesize about like sort of the development of Wendy's like psyche. It's almost like, yeah, initially there's something I learned about those other women. They have something I don't have. I covet that secretly, but I'm never going to let myself know that I covet it. So instead, I'm going to judge it. And then right. I'm going to like develop all these sort of intellectual professor muscles over here.
Yeah.
But then I realize, holy shit, there is still a hole in me that I've never wanted to admit to. So yeah. Now I'm going to fill that hole. And that's the place where I'm saying, I wonder if that's really a hole that wants to be filled, or if it's just something she learned she thinks she's supposed to want. Either way, she went and she filled it. But it's like, yeah, I think the fact that she's work shaming Mia speaks to the fact that that internalized judgment clearly lives in her.
Yeah, totally.
You know, in that,
I think I would be like that as well. I could be such a hypocrite sometimes, you know, and judge women unfairly, but secretly covet the things that they have. I do it all the time. All the time.
So I wonder then, I'm just sort of going back to that moment. I mean, it feels like that was the moment where sort of everything turned between the two of them. And I don't know. I just get curious about it because I kept trying to track the conflict between them. And what's so interesting about both of them, like at Karen's love lunch and then at the spa day for Ashley, it's like they're both so quick to react and to kind of like throw something down that's basically the equivalent of like, you go sit over there, or you don't come talk to me, or you don't do that. They never even really get into the meat of what they're arguing about. Like when I watch their arguments, I don't even really know what they're arguing about because it's literally like,
well, to me, Mia started something because it's great for TV. I'm going to believe that until I see something real from Mia. And Wendy, to me, is going to snap at this woman who is a representation of who she is now.
Well, that's
who
what
she still judges. Go ahead.
No, I mean, that was definitely like a flavor part of it of like, if I'm Wendy and I've gotten the surgery and I'm writing the story that I'm sort of proud of my body now and this is who I am, and it's just interesting. And so then in walks Mia, who is this glammed out,
totally
full figured woman. So suddenly,
and I'm gonna throw in there, which might be a little bit controversial, but maybe I'm just bringing my own shit in there, is like, she's a light skinned woman, which is and Wendy is dark skinned, and I'm dark skinned, right? So there could have been something with that as well. Like that's sometimes the undercurrent of stuff sometimes.
And do you think, because when you say that, then where I go with it as I start to feel it is like, as Wendy, right, who has the dark skin and has worked so hard for her accomplishments, right? And then if she's sort of seeing Mia as an other with her light skin and seeing her also as someone who kind of, you know, climbed her way up through marriage and things like that, does that feel tied into it?
I'm just saying it's a possibility.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just going to say that it's a possibility.
Yeah,
go ahead.
No, it suddenly just makes me feel bad for both of them. Like I just suddenly felt really.
And I've been, this whole time that we've been doing this podcast, I've just been sitting here feeling that for both of them. And then we went back to Monique and then we went to Teddy. And I'm just sitting here being like, oh my God, I just feel this sadness of like not feeling enough ever. Never ever feeling enough. And it could be tapping into my own shit or whatever, but that's what I'm getting, is like, and having to fight for your spot and having to fight for attention or respect, just not feeling enough and having to push through it anyway. It's devastating.
Now, you said something that I thought was interesting, because you said Mia will start something because it makes good TV. Did you experience Mia as being the one who initiated the conflict with Wendy?
I just was like, Mia is crazy as hell. How she gonna come? How is she gonna come in here so quickly, so fast, and like get into it? Like, what's the other? What's Robin's girlfriend who works with her?
Escala.
Escala. She hasn't started nothing. Okay. She started nothing so far. Nothing. So the fact that Mia comes out of the gate just punching, she knows what she wants, Jamie, and she wants to be holding. What do they hold for Potomac?
Is it like a cherry? I don't think they
is
hold
it
that. Oh, no, no, no. It's a champagne glass.
Oh, busted. They could have came up something better.
I love that I thought it was a cherry.
It should be like for DC, it's like an American flag they're waving because it's so close to DC.
Are there like cherry blossoms in?
Oh, yeah, cherry blossoms. That's what it's for.
Okay, yes. That's why I came up with cherry. I love the idea of a little cherry.
I think Mia has a plan, and her goal is for success. Her goal is for more acceptance, more eyes, more love in whatever form. And so, yes, I'm surprised because I don't know her like that. But every time she starts something or opens her mouth, I always think it's very, what's the word that they use when somebody has planned? It's already been planned. It's
calculated.
It's calculated. Correct. And how much of a risk taker is Mia that she's just like, I'm going to come on this damn show and I'm going to show out from the beginning. Like, it's risky behavior. But I think it's the behavior that she knows and has had to survive by.
Well, it's funny you say that because when you were talking, I suddenly kind of felt this real thrill around her of like, God, she's such a like, yeah, she stirs shit up. You know, she's a firecracker. She goes in there. Yep. She kind of lights some grenades and it blows up. And I actually, as we're talking about it, I'm like, oh, it's kind of thrilling. You know, there's sort of an adventure with her. So maybe we're starting to get feel into kind of parts of the authentic Mia.
I don't know.
Well, I do feel, you know, I mean, to use a certain type of language, like the distortion and the defenses, I think they always contain seeds of truth, you know, just like, you know, the fantasy always contains a seed of truth, you know, like our fantasies, our sexual fantasies. It's like when you dig underneath them, there's like an impulse or an energy there there's truth in it. And I feel like even in the things that we do that, might be distorted or destructive or a defense, the flavor of it, it tends to be that it still reflects an aspect of who we are. So I have to imagine with Mia, like somewhere in there, if like even when you sort of strip everything down, there is some relationship she has to being the risk taker, you know, to being, you know, maybe a bit of an adventurer.
Well, again, I can go back to the little bit that we know of her childhood. And if drama was all that she saw, drama is what she's going to give us.
So speaking of drama, like I just keep getting drawn to this moment. So they sit down at the dinner table. Mia says, okay, you got your tits done. What else did you do? Wendy immediately, like that's the moment where Wendy just turns on her. And like I said, she's like, what did you have done? And then, you know, and you see Mia register it. You know what I mean? And Mia's like, well, actually I did this and I did that and I did this. And it just feels like that's the moment where everything sort of, sort of spun out with them. And it's just interesting because it's like, I think they actually see each other. Because then part of what Wendy didn't like about Mia was the way that she was kind of playing both sides of the fence with Giselle and with Karen. And Wendy was actually seeing something there. I think there was a way that Mia was trying to cover all her bases and was trying to get in good with everyone and kind of find her spot in the cast. Conversely, I also think Mia was seeing Wendy, you know, in her insecurity and in her feeling threatened and in her wanting to be in control. And so it's just, again, it's interesting to me that there's a way in which they both have each other's number. And then it's like from that point forward, whenever they sit down, it's like they're both just kind of sitting there like, you're not getting in an inch. You're not getting in an inch. And it's so funny because I think it's the spa day where it's like they sit down and Wendy just tries to start by saying like, she says something like, you don't come over here and talk to me like that. And then she says that and Mia is just immediately like, well, you know what? This is the way I talk. And if you don't like it, you go sit over there. And then they just start barking at each other. And like I'm saying, there was no content to the fight. It was like a pissing contest. It was literally the two of them both trying to like lay down the line and say, you don't do that. And then they're not listening to each other. And then both of them just get pissed off that they're not listening to each other. And it's like they haven't even, nothing has been penetrated.
Here's a question. How much of that is real for Mia and how much of it is real for Wendy? To me, it's real for Wendy. For Mia, because I think by the end of it, Mia's totally okay. You know, she's like, I'm absolutely fine. Like, even if there's no result, to me, Mia, she's going to stir it up and she's going to take you far. I feel like she has a lot more control. a lot more than in this moment than I think I've ever given her credit for. And it's very cunning.
Can you say more about the flavor of that control?
So, okay, Wendy's coming at her. So she's going to come back at Wendy. But probably inside Mia, none of it is causing her any concern, or she's not even like really heated. But she's going to give you all she got in the fight. And Wendy, it's actually stirring something in her. Something inside of her is like a tornado. That's just like, I don't believe that Mia has that same thing going on. And it might sound crazy, but this is just what's coming down for me right now. I think there is so much control in her drama because she is so, again, used to it. And she knows how to take people there. And I think she gets a rise out of it. Because if you've noticed, throughout this season, she has gotten into it with a good amount of the women and said some crazy shit. But by the end of the scene, Mia's cool. Mia's absolutely cool. Like, she goes home and she's not even thinking about it. She's thinking about, what else can I stir up? Like, she doesn't have that same whirling tornado inside of her because she can't allow it, first of all. That'd just be way too much. I'm just seeing this right now. I could be completely wrong, but it makes me excited.
Well, it's so funny you're saying this because when the season started, I was thinking of doing this video. Sometimes I do these videos where I'll do like quick hits into the cast members and just kind of like one word, you know, riff and just what I get off them. And I was going to try to do one about Potomac. I didn't have time or energy to do it, but you know, I didn't know anything about Mia obviously before the season. And so I was just kind of, again, sort of intuitively, you know, sort of tooling around my mind of like, okay, let me just quickly drop into Mia and like what comes up energy wise. And the word I heard was snake. And it was sort of like the energy of the snake. And to me, what that meant was like, yeah, like exactly kind of what you're saying. It's like, people can't see me at home. It's like my eyes are kind of looking out. They're darting around. You know, I'm getting the lay of the land. And it was this feeling of like, I'm going to kind of like see where I can slither in and fit in and sort of cause. I mean, it really was this like cause some trouble. And then when you say like with Wendy, it's this storm inside that Mia will never let herself feel. The image that I actually got off Mia was actually kind of like, rather than a storm inside, kind of like a modulated spiral that goes inward, like coil upon coil upon coil, which again, it's kind of the snake imagery. It's like this, it's this measured, modulated, kind of controlled. I mean, I'm smiling as I say this because it's actually, there's so much pleasure in this energy.
Much pleasure in it.
It kind of makes me think, you know, again, this is sort of going back to like, you know, we can talk about the distorted version of energy and the higher self version of energy. It almost feels a little bit like Puck, you know, from Midsummer Night's Dream. You know, it's like that kind of like mischievous, troublemaking energy, which, you know, there's a higher self version of that, which can kind of stir stuff up to, you know, get people shocked out of their usual way of seeing things. And, you know, sometimes you need a little life to enter the party. And then there can, of course, be another version of it, which is more destructive, which is like, I'm just going to, you know, sort of ruffle feathers for the sake of ruffling feathers. And there's a sense of power and control I get out of it, which it feels like that's sort of more Mia's MO right now. But it's just interesting. These are the images that come as I hear you speak.
Yeah.
So having said all that, I mean, I feel like there's no way we can talk about Wendy's journey this season without bringing in, of course, Giselle bringing, you know, these rumors about Eddie onto the show. And then, of course, Wendy's reaction to that. And of course, and again, this is sort of another area where I'm like, God, the season's so confusing because there's so many, this is such an instance to me where there's multiple things are just true at once, you know, where it's like Giselle and I think Robin are seeing something in Wendy where they're like, wait a second, you've sort of taken an energetic left turn, which is fine, but there's something that they're sensing is like something's, Wendy's writing a new story. And then Giselle's kind of using that as an avenue to bring in these rumors about Eddie on camera. And then, of course, Wendy had a huge reaction to the rumors coming out on camera. And I don't know. I want to know, like, where are you at with all of this, or what comes to you, or is there anything that needs to be said in context of what we've already talked about, Wendy?
Messy, 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 messy. That post should have never been brought in at all. If you don't believe that Eddie has actually done this, why are you even bringing it in at all? Why is it coming in to the narrative? First of all, second of all, it's a TV show. They got to do what they got to do to bring the drama. Potomac is one of the most dramatic of the franchises. So, and Giselle is just messy. It's with her three kids. I am shocked at how messy she is. Like, are you not concerned about, and people, they're like, you know, don't bring the children into this. And the thing that I want to say about that is like, well, I don't know if I would want my mom to be like exposing people like that in that kind of way. Like, that just doesn't feel good. It doesn't feel safe at all.
So I guess, so then do you feel like Giselle bringing up these rumors basically is her, in her mind, kind of thinking, well, we got a show to produce, so let me bring something out that's going to kind of stir something up?
What would be the other reason?
Well, I mean, I guess there's an alternative reality or a hypothetical reality where in Giselle's conscious mind, we're not talking about her unconscious impulses, in her conscious mind, she believes that she is, in Giselle's conscious mind, she believes something's up with Wendy because she sees Wendy's sort of demonstrative behavior, kind of feels there's something energetically off with it. And that she honestly is posing a question like, oh, is she doing this because of insecurity or instability in her marriage? Which is what she put out there.
Okay, that can absolutely be possible. I just think that it's more of the other than that. Like, you know, sex sells. That's a sex story, right? Like, and even, and she can go and say, oh, I turned this story over, but I don't believe it. I don't believe it. When's the last time you told that kind of gossip? You know, it's.
But what's then fascinating about it is, because I'm just sort of putting myself in Giselle's mind, like, that means she's being a really good employee because she's bringing this out on TV. Wendy's getting pissed. And then Giselle is doubling down on it, like basically saying, this is why I brought it out. Yeah, I brought it out.
Okay. Jamie, it could absolutely be possible. It not being, you know, for the TV show or whatever. It could be possible because when I sat there and watched her tell Robin how she needs to pull herself together and do X, Y, and Z, that might be the way Giselle handles things, where it feels inappropriate, actually. She might handle things inappropriately with her friends. I just think she handles things sometimes inappropriately, and it could be that she just handled that one that way.
Because it's almost like there's something pathological about it. And I'm not saying that she's not pathological. I mean, I actually do experience Giselle as a very emotionally stunted woman, like almost alarmingly so. I mean, she reminds me almost of like Lisa Vanderpump in that way. Like, it just feels like there's something so emotionally stunted at such
a young age. Well, she got done so dirty and so wrong in such a public way by her ex-husband that I'm sure she's had to just, I can imagine her being stunted. I can imagine.
Well, and when you say that, like, what I feel around that is, you know, there must have been such a deep relationship to humiliation. And so for me, in the place where I kind of always look at the things that are happening in our lives as sort of carrying frequencies or energies that are familiar to us, it just, and I've always thought this about Giselle anyway, it gets me really curious just about her lifelong relationship to humiliation. And you know, like,
Jesus, why'd you have to say it like that? Ah, so deep.
Yeah, no, I think there's something that Giselle knows about humiliation, and I think that's why she's so mean. You know, it's just like, I'm gonna, you know, I'll cut you before you can cut me, you know?
Absolutely.
But, you know, this all started because I was saying, it's almost like if you think about someone like her, if she's stirring this up for the sake of the TV show, and being a really good Bravo employee and bringing this out on camera for the sake of TV. And then Wendy's so mad. And then she's doubling down on it, kind of protesting like, no, I was doing this out of concern. And yeah, I kind of screwed up. I should have just come directly to you. Like, the like she's so committed to the role.
Yeah.
And if that truly is for the sake of the TV show, because to your point, the way she's making herself look in the process, which is this really messy woman, to me, I'm like, there's almost something pathological about it. Like, I can't imagine being on a TV show, stirring something up like this that has such an impact on a cast member for the sake of TV. And then when they're so upset at me, I just kind of like continue to be the good employee and act the part.
Yeah.
I mean, to really think about what it must be like to be in someone's skin who's doing that. And again, the question for me becomes like, is she even conscious of this?
Well, that's what I was thinking, Jamie, while you were just talking. It was like blind spot, blind spot, blind spot. That's the word that just kept coming up for me. And I think it really is. It's a blind spot that she doesn't even know. Doesn't even know.
But what part is the blind spot? The fact that she's doing this for TV or what?
That part. And I think the fact that she's even doing it at all and it's having effect on people, or it's having a negative effect on people.
Because
like, I think she gets genuinely surprised. Like, wait, why y'all coming at me like this? And it's like, well, Giselle, you just said X, Y, and Z. And then she's like confused as to why they're talking back to her.
I mean, and to Wendy's point, they were friends.
Yeah.
They were friends. And it's interesting, right? Because Giselle, it's like she will have loyalty to Robin, but no one else.
Yeah.
No one else.
Yeah. And why is that, you think?
Why does she have loyalty to Robin, or why does she have loyalty to no one else?
Why does she have loyalty to no one else?
I just heard the words, no one had loyalty to me. Why should I have loyalty to anyone else? Why do you get loyalty? I didn't get loyalty. There's something to me about this season. It's like, because it was so, in some ways it almost reminds me of what I was talking about with Mia and Wendy, where I was like, when they're fighting, there's no there. It just feels like, you know, it just feels like they're just like barking at each other. It's almost similar with the fight between Giselle and Wendy, where it's like what Giselle did was so stark. Like, there was no nuance to it. You know, there was no complexity. This wasn't like Puppygate in Beverly Hills, where they could at least pretend that they were kind of fighting about a dog or something.
Yes.
It was just like Giselle just dropped a bomb, you know? And then Wendy just had a huge reaction.
Well, actually, it was not Giselle who dropped the bomb. It was Ashley who dropped the bomb.
Well, and that's also something that I wanted to ask about. Like, if we're talking about Giselle as almost having this sort of pathological relationship to what she's doing in the context of the show, where does Ashley fit into all of this?
Listen, Ashley, for some reason, God bless her for having a baby this season, because had she not had a baby, I'd be like, throw her and her husband all the way out. Ashley has always been one for drama, point blank. Even though she might be right in some of the stuff that she says, I just think she had no place to tell Wendy what Giselle had told her. Like, no place whatsoever. Like, worry about what's going on in your house. Worry about having another baby by this man that nobody can stand, you know? I have strong feelings here. Ashley, she had no business. It was not her story to tell. But I have found that Ashley will tell the story. Maybe that's the formula for these shows. You just find people who like the drama and who are willing to take risks and put that shit out there. Like, that has to be on their resume as special skills.
Right. Well, they, you know, on Atlanta, they call it the bone carrier.
There you go. Well, they have a couple on Potomac.
I mean, Ashley kind of inhabits the same role as Giselle, where it's like, yeah, there's this feeling, obviously, that she was doing this to kind of grease the wheels of the show. But then even Ashley will be like, well, I just really appreciated it when Candace and Giselle came to me and told me about Michael. It's like there's this whole fiction that they're all colluding around. And they're all kind of not just saying we have a show to produce.
Right.
And this is about how far we're willing to go for the sake of the show.
Yeah.
And I mean, look, this isn't new revelation in the world of Housewives, but for some reason with this season of Potomac, I think again, because there was something so almost just like, what's the word? Like, I want to say like crass or blunt. Like, it's just like the wheels were laid bare. There was no, like I said before, there was no subtlety to this. There was no nuance to this. It fucking was what it was. You know what I mean? It was like, we are just putting this out there for the sake of the show. And so I think for me, as a result of that, I am in a new light sort of considering the women like Giselle and Ashley, where I'm like, you're doing this for the sake of moving production along, and then you're acting out this fiction of why you did what you did. And I just suddenly am wondering about that. Like, at the end of the day, when you go to sleep at night and you're turning your head over to Michael, are you saying, oh God, yeah, I really, you know, I did a good job today. I really earned my paycheck. And, you know, it sucks that I have to do this stuff for the show, but I'm doing it. Or are you sitting there believing your own lies of like, well, I just really appreciated when Candace and Giselle came to me about you, and so I thought I'd return the favor to Wendy. Like, where does your mind have to be acting out these roles in front of the camera?
Yeah. And no judgment, because we both love the show so much. It is really a thing of questioning, why are they doing what? I have no answers for that, by the way. I just wonder what the end goal is, because I think last season was so dynamic. I mean, they had a full-fledged fight on their show.
Which wasn't like, for the sake of the show.
Which wasn't for the sake of the show. It just happened.
Exactly.
But that then put them in different ratings and standings with the Housewives franchise, wouldn't you say?
Yeah.
If you're coming off such a big season like that, you got to keep it going. Like, you just want to feed that monster, you know, you got to feed it.
Yeah. And I think that's kind of why, I mean, I like the season. Like, I'm not against the season. You know, I see other people saying, oh, it's so great. I mean, it's fine. Like, I don't love it. And I think part of the reason is because of everything we're talking about. There's something about the season that just feels
a little fake.
Yeah, it feels very produced, and it's like they're fighting about the mechanics of the show.
Yep.
Or they're fighting about the narratives that they want to write.
Yeah.
Rather than more organic. Yeah, like Monique and Candace had a friendship.
Yep.
And then they got triggered by each other.
Yep.
And then it blew the fuck up, and that was real.
Yep.
And that's kind of what I like the most on The Housewives. Unless, you know, Beverly Hills does the same thing, but they take it to such a weird degree that it almost becomes like surreal theater. So again, like, I do think a lot of the Denise Richards stuff was about the narrative she was trying to write, but it just, the stakes were so high. You know what I mean? Yeah. It was like,
well, she had a long way to go. It's like, boo, you're not going to be able to rewrite everything in a season or two. Like, it's just not going to happen. Denise.
Or even like Lisa Vanderpump, just like the Lucy Juicy Applegate or whatever that dog's name was. You know, it's like there's a way on Beverly Hills that it just becomes so much larger than life and ridiculous. Whereas this, and maybe again, COVID's a part of this, because there's really only so much they can just sort of congregate in groups in homes, and that's really all they can do. But there is a way in which the drama this season has felt very just kind of like, It's you know what it reminds me of almost? It's like an outline of a script. It's like, oh, this is the bare bones thing we need to happen to produce a fight. But the tragedy in all of this, though, is like Wendy's reaction was so real, you know? And that's
well, we could see obviously that even though it might not be true, it definitely hurt her.
Yeah, and it's interesting because, again, in the place where multiple things are true at once, I, you know, in a way, I loved Wendy's reaction because I just love anyone giving it to Giselle, because anyone who stands up to Giselle, you know, it's thrilling to see Giselle get, like, you know, red, right, for filth. But kind of once the dust settled, I was like, wow, Wendy really had a reaction. And, you know, I mean, it's interesting. I'm not sitting here saying, like, oh, that means the rumors are true. The rumors seem pretty outlandish. But obviously, it hit something, it took her somewhere that had nothing to do with that situation.
Yeah, yeah.
Did you have any sense of where that took her?
Well, first of all, you're talking about her husband and you're talking about their reputation, which is a big deal to Wendy, correct? Like, she's all about what she's presenting to the world, and what she's presenting has been respectful and educated. Now this, you know, sexy, whatever, like she's with a power in a power couple. And for somebody to come and say that, you know, there's trouble in paradise, she's got to defend it like to an inch of her life. I don't think she said anything about anybody else's husband up there, right? So she's never said anything about Juan. She's never said anything about Giselle's man. Like none of that has, she's never, and she might have even thought some of these things, right? Because sometimes we think stuff and we don't say it because their people are our friends and we wouldn't dare say something about their significant other. So here she is on top of already being judged around her body, her new body, and how she's been acting in quotes lately. I think it was just the straw that broke the camel's back. It was like, okay, now you've just gone too far, and do not bring that gossip that was already on the internet. Like now you're stirring it up again.
You know, it's coming to me as you speak. It is just this real, I keep like the word and the feeling is like betrayal. Like yeah. Betrayal. A feeling of kind of like with Wendy, I thought I was safe with you.
Yep.
And I'm not, and it almost, again, in that place that kind of I was speaking to earlier, like an early place of like having to protect herself, of feeling wounded. It almost feels like it's got that charge of, because we're talking about how Wendy needs to puff herself up and she needs to define herself in certain ways. And, you know, this is a woman who, like you said, it's like she will do anything to resist kind of like stopping and letting her guard down. And it almost feels like, I believed in the bonds I had with you guys.
Yep.
There's a way in which I sort of let myself feel safe with you, and now you betrayed me there. Yeah. And like, once again, I've learned I cannot trust anyone who's like not my husband, not my sister.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm feeling it in my heart, right? Like my heart's tensing up. It's just like, like here it is again. Here it is again. And as Wendy, it's almost all like, it's almost anger at myself too for letting you in.
Yep. Yep.
All right, Hanifa. I feel like we've covered a lot of ground. I mean, this is a very rich franchise and there's certainly so many topics we could get into, but I feel like we've really covered Wendy. We've covered Mia. We've gotten into some of the Giselle of it all. And it feels like a good resting spot.
I'm okay with that.
All right. Any last thoughts before I bid you adieu?
Well, it's always great to discuss the franchises with you, or the ones that I watch anyway. It's super fun. And thank you for letting me come in and join you.
Oh,
I really appreciate it.
It's my oh my God, I can't even speak. It's my pleasure. And I appreciate you coming here. I love your viewpoint and I love your insight and I love your openness to feeling all your feelings and seeing what wants to come through. And yeah, it just enriches the experience for me as well. So having said all that, Hanifa, where should people find you? What should they be watching? What do you want to let people know about?
Well, I am on all social media platforms as Hanifa Wood, H-A-N is in Nancy, E-E, F is in Frank, A-H, last name is Wood, W-O-O-D. So that's Instagram, Twitter, Facebook. I think I have that blue check mark or something. So if there's another Hanifa Wood, I'm the one with the blue check mark. I don't even know. I have very little followers, but I have that damn blue check mark.
And you're on Truth Be Told.
Oh, yeah. And I'm on Truth Be Told on Apple TV Plus.
Yes.
Every Friday we come out. We have two seasons out. And this season, not only do we have Octavia Spencer, but we have Kate Hudson as well. I know. She's amazing.
And as always, you can find me, Jamie Stein, J-A-M-I-E-S-T-E-I-N, on Instagram. I have all sorts of Bravo-related content and intuitive content there. If you're interested in my work, head over to my website, www.hollywoodreadings.com. You can read about it there, and you can email me to inquire about sessions. That's it, you guys. Thanks for being here, and I will see you all next time. Bye.